Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the BC Members Call taking place on the 6th of June, 2013. On the call today, we have John Berard, Elisa Cooper, Anjali Hansen, Angie Graves, Ron Andruff, Andy Abrams, Janet O'Callaghan, Aparna Sridhar, Steve Del Bianco, and Mark Sloan. We have apologies from Aisha Hassan, Phil Cohen, Stefan Van Gelder, and Laura Covington. I would like to remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Elisa.
Thanks, Benedetta. I'd like to go ahead and sort of review our agenda and then quickly go over a few items. We'll then move to Steve, who will cover a policy update, and we can have some open discussion. And I've allotted 30 minutes for Steve, so hopefully that'll be enough time to cover some of our recently updated comments, to talk about the registry agreement comments, possibly to talk about the accountability and transparency review dean questions, and perhaps even discuss briefly the draft budget comments that were filed by Chris Chaplow. Then I'll be sure to make sure we have time for John Berard to cover an update on the council, on the GNSO council, and then we still have some additional time for any other business. So I guess at this time I'd like to ask if there are any other things that people would like to discuss in today's call, and we'll get that also added to the end of the agenda. No, nothing else that anybody wants to discuss on this call?
Actually, I'm sorry, Elisa, it's Ron. Recently the XCOM circulated a questionnaire about members' relationships and so forth. Perhaps we could just put that on the call for a couple of minutes just to talk that through a little bit.
Yeah, I wanted to actually talk about that, talk about Durbin, and yes, we should definitely talk about that.
Thank you.
So starting off, I did want to cover a few things before we move into Steve's update. And the first thing I wanted to talk about is the timeline, the new GTLD timeline, which ICANN published yesterday. And so hopefully everybody received a copy of that timeline. I don't know, I saw that I think there were some comments from you, Ron, but I think they were from you. I guess the big takeaway there is there ICANN staff is saying that the earliest that new GTLDs could be released would be in October. That doesn't take into account any delay that could be caused by dealing with the safeguards or even finalizing the registry agreement. So I don't know if anybody had any thoughts or questions about that or if there was anything anybody wanted to discuss around that timeline. One interesting piece of news, I guess, that I would like to share is that I did learn from the Trademark Clearinghouse yesterday or the day before that they're saying the maximum time to process a submission to the Trademark Clearinghouse could be as long as 34 days. So the fact that we'll have the 30-day notice prior to the open of a sunrise now becomes even more important. So it's very good that we were able to get that as part of the straw man. The second thing that I'd like to comment on is that I really wanted to thank Chris for his comments that he prepared for on the ICANN budget. And so hopefully we may have some time to discuss some of those. Also, as was just mentioned, Benedetta did send out a request for information from others about their role or interest in participating in the business constituency. And the only point of answering those questions is really to help others understand your perspective and others to help understand sort of where you're coming from and to put into some context comments that are being made by members. It's in no way meant to sort of say who's conflicted or anything like that. I've just heard from members that they often don't know why somebody is participating or what their interest is. I think also just to know who's applied for a new GTLD or who's part of that process will be helpful, actually to become even a resource, too, of information. I don't know, Ron, if there I guess right now would be the best time to discuss sort of the purpose of that. Nobody has to obviously you know, provide any information that they don't want to. Obviously, many members are, and you know, have confidentiality agreements with their clients and can't even reveal that information, you know, can't reveal specific information. But the point is really to try to just help other members understand perspective. Any questions about what the point of sending that out? It was really so that we don't, each time we go through sort of submission of comments, we're not sort of asking people what their perspective is and why they're answering or providing comments in such a way. We're not trying to sort of put people on the spot about why they feel a certain way. Oh, I'm sorry. I see Ron and then Aparna. So, Ron?
Thank you. Thank you very much,
Elisa. I'm sorry. I was not looking at that.
No problem. I had my hand up with regard to the timeline. I wanted to address that first, if we may, and then I'm happy to come back and talk a little bit about that, the other document. But on the timeline, I just wanted to make mention, I responded to your post the other day, and for those who are relatively new or have only been following ICANN from a distance, I think it's really important to understand that when staff put forward a timeline like that or any kind of document that's got a timeline, and particularly if they write, you know, that this is subject to change on that document, you can be absolutely sure that that will change. There is no question in my mind, being part of this ICANN process for 13 years now, every time ICANN has set a date, they've missed that date. So I think it's for planning purposes and just for understanding what's happening, I just want to make sure that everyone understands that if, in fact, ICANN were to hit that mark, it would be the first time in every deadline they've set for 13 years. So I just want to adjust expectations, not to, you know, pour cold water on the staff's great attempts to do something in a proper way. It's just that the reality of ICANN and all the moving parts and the last-minute 11:59 issue that will arise, and believe me, another one will arise, whether it's GAC advice or something, it will arise. So that's number one. The second point I wanted to bring out was exactly what you pointed out, Elisa, is that a lot of the documentation that we're working on right now vis-a-vis the GAC advice and other things will have to be digested, and the new board committee is going to have to digest that. They're going to have to handle that in a manner that is respectful of the work and effort that's gone into it from the part of the GAC and the community and all of the others who spent hours and hours, you know, combined on working on developing a set of safeguards. That will have to be then thought through in terms of the implementation of it. Where does it belong? Does it belong in the registry agreement? Does it belong in some code of conduct? Does it belong in some other place? So that work has to be done, and that's really what's going to stretch the timeline out. But I just wanted to make sure that everyone on the call understands kind of what's happening with regard to that timeline. Thank you.
Yeah, that's so true. They've never hit a date as far as I really know. Aparna.
Yeah, so I'm going back to the issue of the sort of request for information. You know, we'll be sending something along, and obviously we fully support this kind of transparency, and we hope that this will sort of allow us to put those kinds of discussions behind us, really. But I just wanted to note that the questions posed in the document or in the email, they really kind of focus on only one kind, or focus primarily on one kind of potential conflict, which is whether an entity has a relationship with current or future contracted parties. And obviously that's an important thing to know, and, you know, people know that Google has applied for new strings in the TLD program, but there's really lots of different kinds of conflicts. So people might represent competitors of new GTLD applicants or competitors of existing registries or have other sort of interests that motivate them that don't have to do with a relationship with a contracted party. And so it would just be helpful if members disclose that kind of information as well. I know that's harder to capture in sort of a yes-no context or to clearly identify because it's just more nebulous, but I think that would be helpful for everyone.
I agree. Thank you, Aparna. Ron?
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. So speaking to the issue of that, I really applaud the efforts of the XCOM to try to move this discussion forward, because it can get testy from time to time when people are wondering for whom is one speaking. So it was interesting to see that you've had put together this document, and I agree with some members' thoughts that it may be a little too intrusive. It may be almost impossible for them to put the information in because of non-disclosure agreements and client issues, client privilege issues. So the point of the whole story is really to, as Aparna just mentioned, it's about disclosure and transparency. So what I would put out for the members' consideration is that when we speak, that we simply, whatever that topic might be, that we just be very forthright. So we should say, on this particular issue, this is Ron Andrews speaking, and I declare I have no conflict on this issue. Or on this issue, this is Ron Andrews speaking, and I'd like to declare that I have an interest in this as I'm representing XYZ. If we can just all follow that kind of normal pattern of disclosure and respect for each other's activities, we don't need to necessarily carve in stone things that are, you know, that could be seen by the client or by others as putting them in a very difficult position, or putting the consultant of the client, that may be a BC member, in a difficult position. I don't think we have to go that far, but we do need to have disclosure for transparency's sake when we have so many mixed representations across the board. It's not just within the BC, it's in other places as well. But this is what we're trying to get to, an institution that has transparency built into its processes and its policy discussions. And I think if we can get there, we'll mature the organization that much faster. So my thought was that it was some of the questions in there, even for people like myself, a small businessman, would be uncomfortable to ask and to answer. And I can imagine that for other players who are, you know, lawyers or whatever within larger institutions, that they would have a bigger problem with that. So it's really about disclosure and transparency, in my view. And I'd welcome other members' thoughts on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. I agree. Look, I think it is all about transparency, and frankly, a lot of those questions are even, you know, a little uncomfortable for me to answer, but I want to be totally transparent. And again, the point of this is not to say, oh, you're conflicted and you can't have a perspective. All of us are participating because we all have a perspective, and we're, you know, participating particularly in the BC because we have an interest somewhere, whether it's strictly as a brand owner or, you know, we're also interested in the way the new GTLD program rolls out from a business perspective. We all have our interests. So I think we just want to try to have that transparent to other members, and to the extent possible, I just would ask people to try to answer those questions, and I will do the best that I can in answering those questions, because you'll see of any member, you could say that I have the most conflict probably of any member, you know, in an organization, given that, you know, Mark monitors a registrar, where, you know, we have business relationships with many existing BC members. We help companies apply for new GTLDs. So, you know, I want all of that to be open and transparent. So, you know, if there's no question about, you know, what my interest is, but that doesn't mean necessarily that I'm conflicted in terms of providing a perspective, you know. So, at any rate. Let's see,
Anjali? Yes, hi. I completely agree, and I just find it helpful to know who represents who and what their perspective is. I just wanted to, because I'm new here, learning as I go, I wanted to just put out there that we can all have our perspectives, but I think maybe whenever we come to a point where we have to render recommendations or provide comments, maybe we should just go through that BC mission, those points, and say, are we addressing the issues from what the mission of the BC is, which is to promote end-user confidence and to ensure the competitiveness of the registry and registrar, and to make sure everything is technically stable, so that while we can have our own perspectives and make comments based on those, I think we should make sure that we're looking at it from the mission of the BC whenever we make a comment collectively.
That's an excellent point.
Lisa, this is J. Scott Evans. I just joined, and I don't know if I've met Anjali, but I want to fully support her comments because we can all file comments on for our individual companies ourselves. So if we have an additional perspective that's different than the mission of the business constituency, we certainly have an avenue for doing so.
Yep, totally agree.
We've met Jay. It's Anjali.
Any other comments or thoughts on this topic before we move on? There was one other thing that I wanted to bring up that was something that Chris Chaplow brought up, and it was the fact that, just to give a little background here, when registries want to make a change to their agreement, they have to go through a process called this RSEP, which is the Registry Services Evaluation Process. And essentially, some of the registries have made changes to their contracts by way of this process, but I don't think there's been much focus on following changes to contracts that have happened through the process. And I think, you know, Chris brought up an issue where a change had occurred, comments had been made through the public comment form, but they weren't adopted into an agreement that was being changed via this RSEP process. And I guess I wanted to put that out there to see if this was something that we wanted to sort of take up as an issue, and actually also ask Chris if he had anything additional to say about that.
Lisa, this is J. Scott. I wrote the fundamental document that was used by Bruce to put that together back about 9 years ago, and I think it is probably a process that hasn't got much attention. With regards to public comments, I would raise my hand and ask, when was the last time any public comment, we know how ICANN dealt with it. I would say 99% of the comments are completely ignored, or we don't even get their analysis of public comments until after they've already put in motion the decision, which is a huge problem that ICANN needs to get under control. But this may be a way to shed some light on that problem, and I'd be happy to work with Chris or others to kind of look at that process and see how it's developed and how it's being used.
That would be great. I see John Berard and Chris's hands raised, and a comment from Steve that maybe we could cover this under the registry agreement, which I think is a good, very good point. So let's move to John and then Chris.
So good morning or good afternoon, John Berard. The one of the items on the GNSO Council call meeting this week is a discussion about the GNSO and GNSO Council review. And I'm wondering just how outside the administrative lines that conversation is going to go. And I'm wondering if perhaps I should promote this notion of where do comments go? What happens to them? What is the process? And should that not be a part of the review, just to put it further forward on the table? What would you think of that?
Can we just take a quick vote using the Adobe Connect? If you agree with that, there is the little man with his hand raised. There's like a little green checkbox if you agree with raising this issue of like where comments go with the GNSO.
Lisa, I'm on vacation, so I have nothing but a smartphone, so I want to just, Jay Scott, I raised my hand.
Okay. And it looks like pretty much a majority of people agree, so I think the answer is yes, John.
All right, so I will take that up at least as one of the points that I'll make on that call on that subject.
Okay. I remember Chris had his hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. I'll just be brief. Thanks for your support on this issue, and also Jay Scott. You wrote a quick email to the list last night, and what you say is correct. I think I haven't had a chance yet, but I will reply and add a little bit more meat to that. Certainly, one issue was the comment in the particular request that I was focused on. It was a very clear-cut example, but would need to do a little bit more research across the board to check that was the case on others. And what I'm probably more concerned about is the lack of ICANN supervision in the implementation phase. So I'll add, as I say, I'll react, build on what you've written, and just make it a bit stronger and a bit more factual. Thanks.
Okay, so this seems like, so just the issues of sort of where do comments go, and then also issues around RCEP and where comments go related to that, and implementation of those RCEP changes look like things we're interested in sort of taking up. And as Steve mentioned, perhaps we can also add this to our comments on the registry agreement, which are due on the 11th. So with that, I don't think I had any other topics to cover, and we should move on to Steve.
Hey, thanks, Elisa. Folks, I sent an email around this morning with a couple of background elements for the policy portion of this call. And Elisa, it's about 23 after, so please just watch the clock so we terminate this in less than 30 minutes. There are three comments we submitted since our last business constituency call on the 22nd of May. One was on GAC safeguard advice on the new GTLDs. We were one of 132 people that commented on that. And these are comments we submitted to the new GTLD committee of ICANN's board of directors. And so everyone will be wondering what they'll do with this advice. And I wanted to put that in the context of the timeline. One thing that the board needs to do is to officially react to official GAC advice. Only a few elements in the GAC advice or consensus GAC advice. They had to do with applications for .Africa and one other. Those are easy. It's these non-consensus GAC advice that the board has to deal with. Seems to me there's two paths. The board could implement it, which brings great delays as the board and staff work up implementation details for implementing the advice. And in most cases, that'll mean changing the base registry agreement and the RAA, which have just gone through multiple stages of approval. So there's significant delays if the board accepts GAC advice in a way that causes implementation changes or agreements. If, on the other hand, the board were to reject some or all of the GAC advice, there are additional delays because bylaws require ICANN board and GAC to go through a process of discussion and a consultation whenever the GAC advice is rejected. So either way, pursuant to your timeline comment, there's bound to be slippage in those deadlines as the board decides what to do with GAC advice. A third potential is that applicants could read the tea leaves and decide if they're in the crosshairs of some of that GAC safeguard advice as a consumer protection string, a sensitive string, that they ought to implement something to satisfy GAC advice as part of their public interest commitments or PIC spec in the contract. Applicants can do that voluntarily in a way of satisfying GAC advice and presumably avoiding a GAC objection. But it's hard to say whether applicants will do that. That might be a way that an applicant could sneak through before the end of this year if they were to simply put a lot of the GAC safeguards into their own voluntary consent. So there were 132 in total. I haven't read them all yet, so I really don't know where we'll fall on that list. But those I have read suggest to me that the BC was more specific about what we think the board can do in reacting to GAC advice. And maybe that's a hallmark of the work we do, is we try to be specific and give actionable comments that ICANN's board and staff can actually take and run with. So I hope that's the case, and I do hope that the GAC would appreciate the fact that the business constituency typically agrees with the GAC. We appreciate the GAC support, and for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, we supported the GAC safeguard advice. So that's just a summary, Elisa. Did you want to have any discussion or take a cue on discussion on the GAC
I'd like to be in the cue.
Jay Scott, it's you and Elisa. Jay Scott, go ahead.
First of all, I want to say thank you, Steve, for the amount of information that you get out in a concise executive summary for us to keep us informed of where things are headed and how they are in the pipeline. I've been involved in other organizations and it's not as well organized, and that's great because we're all busy and you do an excellent job, so thank you very much. Secondly, I want to say that I was contacted by some people at the DOC and they were very disappointed in some of the comments that came out from brand owners through the various avenues with regards to the GAC advice. And I think the biggest problem here is the fact that ICANN and the GAC are struggling with how they relate to each other and what that effect is on this process. Because as I see it, ICANN is pushing down the highway at 90 miles an hour, and GAC sees itself as, you know, the way stations along for those in the U.S. That's where trucks have to come in and have to be weighed and stopped, get off the expressway and be weighed and checked out to make sure they can operate within a certain state, that they've met the requirements. And the GAC sees themselves sort of as that function. And they're being ignored by ICANN, or at least ignored by the timeline that ICANN set forward, which is causing the applicants to react negatively to GAC advice, because they're like, we're moving forward, and now you're asking us to do X, Y, and Z. It's too late. So I think there's a fundamental breakdown in how ICANN and the GAC are working together, and they've not solved that problem, and it's causing a lot of churn in the system, and I'm afraid it's going to end up in an adversarial situation if people don't come along, Steve, like you said, and give very specific practical solutions and things for everyone to focus on that are focused at solution and resolving problems and getting to the end game. But it doesn't seem like we're headed that way. I'm a little bit concerned.
Jay Scott, this is Steve. Can I ask you to clarify what is Commerce upset about or surprised about with respect to brand owner reaction?
They felt like, specifically, they felt like the brand owner's comments from the BRG were not supportive. That while they were supportive in the fact that they said, we agree with everything you say, we worry that this is coming at the 11th hour, and at this point it's just too late to implement a lot of these things. And so we have some concerns, and they were like, we've always been there for brand owners. We don't understand why you would do this. And it wasn't after a call where we said, well, you understand we're not brand owners, we're brand registries. And that's a very different dynamic within the self-regulatory model and what's being asked of us. We are also drawing into this as we advance. We get more advanced within our own organizations. People who are not ICANN savvy, right? They're business people who have business plans and business objectives. And when you start, they have this clear plan of what they want to do with their GTLD, and you start throwing the ICANN model on top of it, they're not happy. And their direction is, you tell these people they can't run businesses like this. You tell these people, we are not going to do this. We've got this much money invested. We've got this business plan, and we are not going to turn around and change things now. And the answer, oh, but that's how I can work, doesn't really work translate very well when you're talking to the C-suite. So that's what we—that's what they were frustrated with. They felt like they had gone to bat for brand owners once and every time, again and again and again, and our support, while there was support, it was lukewarm. And they wanted more robust support.
Okay, thanks, Jay Scott. Ron Andruff, and then we need to move on.
Thank you, Steve. I just wanted to make a comment about the excellent work that was done by the DC members as a whole. I commented on this a month or so ago, saying that there's so much activity going on that we really welcome all the voices, and please don't hesitate, even if you're coming to the BC and you're relatively new, to jump in and bring your voice and bring your edits and so forth. And I think that this the work on this document was really exemplary of what we have been striving to see in the BC for years. And I just want to comment that everyone who weighed in on that and participated, even at a distance, thank you for that. And I'm happy to hear your comments, Steve, that we were the most specific on actualizing safeguards, because that's exactly where the BC wants to position itself. Well, you know, within the understanding of the government and within the understanding of ICANN. So thank you, everyone, for that. So that was it.
Hey, thanks, Ron. All right, let's move on. One other comment we filed in the last 2 weeks was comments on the FY 2014 draft operating plan and budget. Chris Chaplow, thank you for drafting that and getting it in. There are 12 comments submitted in addition to our own. Chris, anything you wanted to say to recap that or talk about next steps?
Yes, just quickly. Thanks, Steve. Chris speaking, and thanks, Angie, for the help with that. I've had an acknowledgement, and the staff responses to our comments will be the end of the business day on Friday, the 21st of June, which, as I calculate, is a few hours after the reply round closes at 2359 UTC. So, unfortunately, that won't be Very helpful. I've had a quick look at the comments. Actually, there is only five comments because there's a couple of there's a couple of corrections. They were holding comments from the CSG and at large, saying they would go in the reply round. So there was only comments from ISP Registry BC, Mike O'Connor, and Raimundo, talking about his point about the historic costs on the GTLD. I'm not sure of his point, but he's definitely got a point there because he's been going on about it for so long. And a duplicate comment. Interestingly, that Paul Diaz and Chuck and Tim Seltzer commented on their own, and then the identical comments came in from the registries on the last day. At least BC, and we got some comments in. CCNSO, no comments at all, which is interesting. I have to find out why, because they're very active in this. I haven't had a chance to do analysis of those comments, so I will do, and I'll send that to the list to give us some guidance on, you know, what we're supporting, what we're not supporting, and try and take our document a bit further for the 21st of June. Obviously, any volunteers or help are greatly accepted on that. Thanks.
Chris, thanks for your good work on that. And the third one that we submitted in the last 2 weeks was comments on the proposed final registrar accreditation agreement. And a lot of great work there from Anjali Hansen and Elise in particular. And I think Ron also contributed a piece of that, as did Zahid and Susan Kawaguchi. So those comments are in as well. There were 23 total filed. This was presumably a proposed final RAA for 2013. So it remains to be seen what, if anything, ICANN staff will recommend they do to the agreement pursuant to the comments. If, in fact, they got comments and they changed the agreement, that might even require yet another round of public comments on the amended RAA. We'll have to wait and see. All right, let me turn quickly to comments that are pending right now, and I only wanted to cover two to make this call quick and easy. The first is draft BC comments on the final registry agreement. And in the email this morning, I included a link to that. Elisa Cooper, thanks to taking on the role of this. Lisa took a look at the comments we filed in March of 2013, where we focused very specifically on four parts of the registry agreement that the BC was concerned about. Elisa was able to revisit each of our four concerns in light of if ICANN had accommodated some of our previous concerns. But, you know, to make a long story short, they didn't accommodate many of our concerns. But they did make significant changes to the unilateral amendment part, and Elisa's draft does a good job of noting that at least part of our concerns with unilateral amendments have been addressed by the process they had, which allowed an operator to apply an exemption from an amendment if the amendment would actually cause the registry to violate its own prior obligations and registrant policies. Elisa, we'll take a cue on folks that want to comment on yours. I did put a link. I think I attached it to the email, so everyone has a chance to see that. And, Elisa, I noted earlier in the call, we brought up the question on should we request in these comments that there be community input when a registry agreement has to change arising from an RCEP, or a Registry Services Evaluation Process. This was the comment you and Chris Chaplin were discussing at the beginning of the call. So, Chris and Elisa and those others who are interested, should we add to our registry agreement comment something with respect to the amendments due to RCEPs? We'll take a cue on that. Go ahead, Anjali.
This is just a general point of clarification because I get so many emails. It's probably been sent, but how long do we have to comment as members now? Like, what is the deadline for us to give Elisa comments?
This comment period closes on 11th of June. We are picking up comments that we filed back in March, and we're simply revisiting those that ICANN did or did not address. So if we were to take the draft that Elisa has now, I think we would submit it without an official review and approval process, since it's the same comments we've submitted in the past. If we decide to take on additional topics, like the one I just brought up on the RCEP, we'll need the next 4 or 5 days to take care of that. But, I mean, I would suggest to you, Anjali, that if you have something today, right now is the time to bring it up.
I need to look at it. That's why I'm wondering how much time do I have to do that. What's the drop? Like,
if anything new would have to be introduced today. To be fair to the drafter and all of us that have to get it approved, if it's going to be new in addition to what's been circulated, let's bring it up.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Anyone else in the queue to discuss whether we want to ask for public comment on registry agreement changes due to an RCEP? Okay, I don't see anything on that, so I don't think that necessarily there's support to put that in here. Elisa, Chris, any comment on that?
My understanding is when those changes are added, that it is posted for public comment. I just don't think many people are paying attention to that stuff.
And therefore, maybe we mentioned this in the ATRT, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, with respect to whether the public comment periods are effective. It may not be spent on the registry.
I think that's right, Steve. I think that's a better way to do it, is to go to the ATRT with it and to really make a big deal out of it, because it cuts across all of ICANN, not just with regards to RCEP.
That's a good segue, Jay Scott, because we can now turn to the other open public comment period. So before I do so, are there any other BC members who want to comment on Elisa's draft that was circulated last week and attached to this email?
There's just one thing that I think was very interesting that one of my colleagues actually came across, and that is in the PIC specs, like submitted, for instance, by Donuts, there's a clause in there that basically says something along the lines of that they basically have the right to let me tell you exactly. They have the right to modify or discontinue their specs for any compelling business need. And I just think that's very interesting because it kind of renders those PIC specs not you know, very effective. In my
superfluous.
So my brother, they're unilaterally offered, the assumption that that applicant is making is that any PIC spec commitment can be unilaterally withdrawn.
Yeah,
but that's not a commitment, right? That's as my brother-in-law would say, the big print gives and the small print taketh away. That's not a commitment to say, I'm committing to you to do what I want to do when I want to do it if I feel like I want to do it. That's not a commitment.
Right.
So that's wrong. I don't care if it's unilateral. That is a work that is skirting around what these are supposed to do, and that is put your feet to the fire.
All right, and the BC, the comments that we've drafted, that Elisa drafted, do include the very point that Elisa just made,
okay,
and that we express grave concern about this.
Yeah,
we're not being
good.
Specific, recommending what I can do. Is there a solution that we should also recommend on that?
Well, the solution would be that language like that be taken out of any commitment, and the commitment be what it actually is, a commitment, and that all of those be read carefully, and that any language that qualifies or modifies the applicant's ability to have to stick to the commitments is removed by ICANN, is as it not in compliance with what a PIC is supposed to be.
Would that mean that any commitment stated now is permanently and forevermore stuck on the...
Unless there's a formal process put into place to deal with that, just like the RCEP. So you would have to say, we need to change XYZ, and here's what we need to do, and then there's a review process of some sort. I mean, I'm one voice here, Steve. I'm just saying, you know,
okay.
But I'd hate for someone to say, oh, you get it, they're delegated, and then 6 months later they say, oh, we think the business situation has changed, because you know it's going to. You know,
a public comment out on the dispute resolution process with respect to PIC specs, something that GAC was very keen about. I have not read the details, but presumably that's where there's a dispute originated that suggests that a registry is not following its own PIC spec. I think we ought to look at that to see whether that reveals anything about the process, because if a TLD is accused of not following its spec, it shouldn't be as easy to just simply withdraw it and avoid future problems. Elisa, as the author on this one, the rapporteur, let me ask you, under the third paragraph on Spec 11, do you think it's appropriate for the BC to add a sentence or two suggesting that the BC recommends a more formalized process for the amendment or withdrawal of PIC specs that have become part of a registry agreement that's been relied upon by stakeholders.
Yeah, let me add that.
Okay, and John Berard in the queue.
Thank you, Steve. I think we have been on record at every turn opposing unilateral action, whether by a member of the community or the board. And so, in this instance, I would say that the PIC can be modified, but there needs to be a process by which it can be done. I'm not sure what that process is. Does it involve community, the full community, or is it the result of a negotiation? I don't know, but I can't believe that we should let any individual party have the responsibility to no action without review.
Thanks, John. So it sounds like we have agreement on that. Unless anyone else wants to intervene, we will add a sentence or two recommending a process. And we are not going to do something on the RCEP there. We'll do it in the ATRT.
Yeah,
great. I think that's it for the registry.
Send it out.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Elisa.
I'll get that added and send it out later today.
Thanks a lot. All right, let me turn to the final one and get this in within our time limit here. There are comments on the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. That comment period closes June 9th. And this is just the first of many bites at the apple of the ATRT. We're not taking official positions. We're simply giving answers of some kind to questions that the ATRT team has posed to sort of kick off their work. The ATRT is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. This is the second one. We had the first one 3 years ago. These are required under the affirmation of commitments that where ICANN creates a team, the team studies a particular set of issues in paragraph 9.1 of the affirmation of commitments on whether ICANN is meeting its obligations, accountability and transparency in the global public interest. I discussed this on the May 22nd call, and we were able to get volunteers like Stefan, Zahid, Marilyn Cade, and we began to put together a draft for what the BC might provide as input to the ATRT as they begin their work. All of those drafts are included in the document that I circulated this morning. Earlier on this call, we've discussed adding concern about RCEP changes to registry contracts and that those too should be taken and find a place to put that point as well. I also heard discussion earlier on this call about what happens to comments when we make comments. And remember, John Berard brought it up with respect to counsel. But that is another perfect issue that you would raise in an accountability and transparency team, since that's big transparency and also on accountability. Are our comments being listened to? So I would think that both of those can be added as paragraphs as well. So I'll take a cue on input on any of the draft text that is included in the email, as well as any other volunteer help to help us get this done and circulated for BC input later today or tomorrow. I see Elisa in the queue. Why don't you go first?
I just wanted to let people know that the ATRT is looking to meet with us as the CSG by a webinar, and I expect that will happen in the next week or so, and we'll make sure everybody has plenty of notice so that we can meet with them as a group.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elisa. And in addition to notice, let's be forewarned that the ATRT members are very disappointed and upset that there hasn't been more attention paid to the critical questions they evaluate. This is the review team who reviews not only the ATRT that ICANN, but it reviews whether the other affirmation review teams have had the recommendations implemented. So it's sort of an uber review, and I know that in Beijing, Brian Q and members of the team were really upset that there weren't more comments filed. So let's make sure that we can draw these to a close. Are there any substantive comments on the text you have before you? Great, and I will then say that don't come in at the last minute, please, with big significant changes. I will take the work that Stefan and I have done here, hold it into a draft comment that I'll circulate later today. That's an appropriate place for BC members to make edits that are relatively minor, but the time has passed, I think, for major substantive points, given that this is due on the 9th of June. Elisa, I think that's it for the policy section, and I'll turn the agenda back over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And I'll just reiterate what others have said. I think, Steve, you just did an awesome job, and I'm really happy and really, dare I say, proud about how we were able to complete all of these comments. And I know that there were some rough patches, but I think we should all be really very happy with the end result. With that, let's move on to John to cover council activities.
Good morning. The meeting is June 13, and I would say that the most interesting aspects of it are not among the motions, but among the discussion. There is, as I noted earlier, a conversation to be had based on the upcoming reviews of the GNSO and the GNSO Council. I'm probably speaking a little out of turn. There was a call for volunteers to participate in a group to help organize the council's thinking on that, and Zahid did volunteer for that. I know he's on the mailing list for it, and so I will yield to him as being the sort of official voice of what's going on. But unofficially, and as a member of the council, I feel that this might be an opportunity to get on the table some of those matters that seem to be perennial points of irritation, not the least of which, as we have discussed on these calls, the contentious nature of what is known as the non-contracted parties house, that perhaps there are organizational changes that should be considered as to create a more appropriate or table of organizations. I apologize for being so oblique in that personally, and that's why I'm being oblique organizationally, because personally I'd like to see the non-contracted parties have blown up and allow what exists as the commercial stakeholder group to have more of its own legs under it within the GNSO and at the council. That is something that is a story yet to be written. And so if there are things that have bothered us about ICANN that are rooted in its organization, perhaps this is an opportunity to get those on the table. So I'll ask, is there anything beyond the treatment of public comments, as we discussed earlier, that you think might be good to be brought up here?
John, this is J. Scott Evans. I think that, and I talked to Steve Crocker about this some time ago, I think that somebody needs to have a discussion with Deborah Hughes, because Deborah was brought in by the board of directors to sort of bring in some more professional and different perspective to the non-commercial stakeholders group. And what was done to her, both personally and professionally, by about four or five of those individuals on blogs and on things, was horrifying. And the ICANN board basically stuck this woman out there and her organization and then completely abandoned her. They now have some crazy setup where nonprofit organizations that apply have to be approved by the very people that the structural changes were brought in to sort of muffle their voices and give different perspectives. And they have turned down 501c3 organizations because they sell T-shirts on their websites claiming, well, that's not a nonprofit. Now, Milton Mueller and Robin and Aubrey aren't the IRS. And under the U.S. law, a 501c3 is a nonprofit under the federal laws of the United States of America. So they don't get to say, oh, well, we disagree because they sell T-shirts. And I think we need to shine a light into this rat hole and drive these rats into the sunlight. And the ICANN board is letting them get away with this.
So I cannot claim to be expert on the day-to-day on this, J. Scott, but I do understand that the board has exerted some degree of pressure to break that logjam in terms of membership. It was pretty clear that the legacy members of the non-contracted stakeholder group were not open to having new members who might become counselors, which seemed to be a bit odd. And I believe the membership process has been addressed. I believe it has, but I don't know. So it might be that, as is often the case, reputation lags reality, that maybe there's more...
I just think there needs this needs to be looked at in depth, and there needs to be some sort of vetting of this. It needs to be out in the open. These are the very people who stand up and say that corporate America and businesses are trying to shut everybody out, and they're doing this. I saw this same group of people make a woman cry in Paris in 2008. She was a law professor from Brigham Young University that was very concerned about children. Now, she's extremely conservative. I get it. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but she has a right to have a voice. And the voice that she sought to have was in a non-commercial group that says that they speak for all the unheard. They made this woman cry publicly, and you can verify this. Cheryl Langdon Orr was standing right there with me.
All right. Well, I will pursue that as a sidebar. I probably don't feel smart enough about it or comfortable enough about it to bring it up at the council meeting, but. If I learn something between now and then, I'm quite willing to rattle any saber that anybody would be foolish enough to put in my hands. So I would say that that'll be an interesting one. And officially, you should drive most of your comments through Zahid because he's a volunteer member of the working group.
Did you see what they did to Jennifer Wolf when she asked a question at your wrap-up session about what was the motion process? Because you know, that meeting went to shit in about 5 seconds, and she wanted to know, as a non-voting, non-com appointee, what the process was because she thought it was broken. They attacked her. Milton and Joy went after her to the point that a member of the audience, who's a friend of mine who'd never been to an ICANN meeting, said, "Do you all actually allow people to treat others that way?"
Right, no, I was sitting near her at that point, and in fact, just at the break before, had complimented her on how, as someone so new, was able to bring so much value by being able to draw upon her business background. And then the whole J'accuse episode arose, and she was bewildered by it all. I haven't had much of a chance to talk to her about it since, but I think it made her more resolved to participate, not shy away from things. So
yeah,
it's pretty clear that that people who have been a part of ICANN for a long time and those who are new, the failings of the way it has organized, that the GNSO has organized itself, and this may be an opportunity to get at some of those what have been perennial problems. So we'll see. But anyway, I'm anxious to hear not just not just in terms of the public comment or the public behavior, but you know, any aspect that is a problem for us that is linked in any way to the table of organization. You know, this links to the other conversation, the other discussion that's on the table right now, which is a discussion about the non-commercial stakeholder group request for reconsideration of the plus 50 decision by the board with regard to the trademark clearinghouse. You're all aware, of course, that they made that request, that the request was denied. The decision to deny the request is for the board for a vote on the 27th. Our council meeting is an opportunity to have a conversation about that, about that subject. The thinking by some counselors, led by Jeff Newman, that there would be some direction, some position that the council would offer up to the board before it takes that final vote. The discussion is going to focus not as much on the subject of the decision as the method and the process of the decision. And so not to suggest that the council is seeking to overturn the plus 50, although there are many on the council who would like to do that. So I would say that those are the two most interesting aspects of the council meeting. The motions, there are two, maybe a third. They're jots and tickles with regard to policy and procedure. So it's nothing that I think is going to take too much time or draw too much controversy. And then there will be a discussion about what it is we're going to do in Durban, which is always interesting because I worry that sometimes those face-to-face meetings take on a pro forma aspect as opposed to a progressive policy format. But as you probably can hear in my presentation, I worry sometimes that the council is justifiably criticized for being slow to act and unwilling to see the forest or the tree. But that's pretty much where we're going to be. Those are the issues that I think are of interest for the next week's meeting. Now, having said that and having heard nothing in response, I will float a notion that I had discussed with Steve a while back, and that is that perhaps the BC should begin to be more aggressive in terms of offering motions to deal with some of these problems, not just be satisfied to get them on the table. I don't have any that I want to suggest, but I would encourage people, as they think about the way ICANN operates, if there are issues reports that might be of value to making our point that could lead to new policies that would get us out of some of these ruts, I'd be more than happy to take a more aggressive posture at the table. I mean, at this point, we play a lot of defense. If there's an opportunity to play some offense, that would be great, too.
Don, I mean, would it make sense to think about asking for an issues report on the way in which comments are handled? Is that something that's even been done before?
You know, I don't know. So my first step would be to send a note to Glenn and Marika and ask what the history has been.
John, the best person that's going to know that is going to be Christina Rosette. I would just reach out to her personally because this has been a bugaboo for her. She was on there for 6 years. So I would suggest you talk to her, too.
Okay, I'll also do. Yeah, that would be a perfect. That would be a good conversation to get started in. Could lead to a policy development process that could change things for the better. Understanding, of course, that in the process, it will wind up seeming longer than it needs to be. So. I don't want to suggest that we'll be the architect of our own misery in that regard, but just understand that it won't all, if at all.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments or things that people would like to raise before we close the call? All right. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for today's participation and all of your patience and input and everything over the last couple of weeks. I think it's been really great. We are scheduled to have another meeting on the 20th, so perhaps we can pick up this discussion we've just started about whether or not we want to bring to the council this issue about the way in which comments are handled. So perhaps we can continue that conversation in 2 weeks. So with that, if there aren't any other questions or comments or things that people would like to raise, I would like to thank you for joining and say that I look forward to talking to you all in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Michelle. You cannot stop the recording.